Okay, just about. As you all know, those who come regularly, I was away last week. I just came back this afternoon, going along teaching in Malaysia and Malacca, Terengganu, Kuala Lumpur, Johor, Singapore. So when I'm not here, I am not on holiday. I work. But even though you work really hard and give talks all day and travel so many flights to get back from one place to another, even so, I always make sure that I enjoy my life. I put joy into what I'm doing. I don't expect joy. I just make it fun. So people think I'm crazy. You just finished a long tour, working really hard, giving lectures all over the place. If you have any other of these lecturers, they give one talk in the evening, or, you know, then they go home. Or university lecturers, maybe two or three lectures a day, and then they're off home again afterwards. I just carry on and 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 on. It reminds me of just one of my observations. Because I am getting old now. But I do notice that when you do get old, you know, you do need to wear glasses. You do, you know, sometimes you can't hear properly. So if you come up to ask questions afterwards, you know, just please come up close so I get the right question. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's hard to get up from the aircraft seat. Your legs are a bit weak and your arms aren't as strong as they used to be. You notice that everything gets weaker the older you get, except for one part of your body, which gets stronger and stronger the older you get, and that is your mouth. And that's so true. The older people, they can really talk. They can't walk very much. They can't see and just hold up stuff, but they can certainly talk. And they can talk much more the older they get. So I know that I can talk a lot and have a lot of fun, but you may not know that I've got a huge following overseas, and just even last night I was in Singapore, and even after many talks, people were lining up to actually get their books signed and have photographs. And I had a great realization on this trip. I have a realization that, you know, that sometimes people are always looking for the meaning in their life, the purpose of their life. I now know what my purpose is: to sign books and have my photograph taken. But what I was doing there is, okay, you can get really upset and angry. Why do I have to do this? Have ever you thought like that? Why do I always have to do the dishes? Why do I always have to go to work? Why can't I enjoy life like everybody else? And everybody else is not enjoying life except for people like me. Because, no matter what you do, if you have to do it, put fun into it. And for goodness sake, stop complaining. I don't know about you, some of you complain about going to work. Come on! If you really enjoyed your work, if you like getting up on a Monday morning or whenever you go to work, you really enjoy and look forward to going to work, they would not need to pay you. Please always remember that the salary is a bribe to make you do something you'd rather not do. That's why they don't pay me, do you, Mrs. President? Because I enjoy what I'm doing, so I don't need to get paid. So, don't complain about, I'm complaining about getting stuck in the traffic. It's great being stuck in the traffic, because when you're stuck in the traffic, life starts to go slowly. We always like to be in the fast lane, and in the fast lane is really tense. You have to look at all this traffic coming at all angles. You know that if people do hit you in a traffic jam, it's only tiny damage. But if they hit you when you're going fast, you're in big trouble. So there's many benefits. You can actually relax when you're in a traffic jam. But what happens when people are in a traffic jam or they're going to work in the morning is because they keep thinking too negatively about what is happening. I don't want to be in the traffic jam. I want to be at work. Come off it. Do you really like being at work that much? You've got a great excuse. You can tell your boss I was in a traffic jam. That's why I'm 10 minutes late. That means 10 less minutes you have to be with your boss. That's the trouble. People think their bosses are just so hard. People always complain about the bosses, but there's many people who come here on a Friday night who are those bosses. So it's ours as well. And you know what the bosses complain about? They're workers. They never do as much as they would. I call that the different types of suffering in life. Because this was my experience, like being a monk. This is just an example. When I was a young monk, when I first ordained, I wasn't as fat like this. I was really skinny, all bones and hardly any meat on me, any flesh at all. And when we would sit meditation or sit in a ceremony, only the senior monks had all the cushions. The junior monks, we had to sit on hard concrete. And I thought that was really unfair. Because those senior monks, they don't need a cushion. They've got their own upholstery. It's called fat. And also, those senior monks, they didn't have to do any physical work. You know, in the monastery, whether it was shoveling earth, whether it was using the wheelbarrows, all the hard labor was done by the junior monks. And those fat, lazy senior monks, they didn't do anything. And now it comes to the food as well. Because if you ever come to any of our dhanas is what they're giving, especially feeding the monks and the nuns, you always give the best food to the senior monk first of all. And then it goes down the line, one after the other, to the junior monk and maybe the lay people afterwards. And I was so thin in those days. And I thought, that's really unfair. The best food should start with me first. And then go to the big monks afterwards. Because after all, now all these senior monks, they're all enlightened already. They didn't need the good food. People like me did, but I had to get the leftovers every day. I was really thin. And I started getting what I called junior monk suffering. And now I'm a senior monk. Now I don't need cushions, but I get lots. Now I don't need to do physical work. Other people do that for me. Now I get first choice of the food every day. But have I let go of my suffering yet? No. Because I see all these junior monks, they don't have to talk to people all day. They don't have to hear all the problems people actually load on me about their marriage, about their children, about the economy, about terrorism, about climate control, and all these things. Guys be crazy sometimes. I became a monk to get rid of all of that. And all the other administration work, any complaints, it comes to me first of all. So now I do not have junior monk suffering anymore. I have senior monk suffering. And this is one of the reasons why you shouldn't complain in life. Those of you who complain about going to work, and so you retire, you've got nothing to do. Well, actually, these days when people retire, they volunteer, they join committees. And they have to do even more work. And so, when you are working, you've got working person suffering, and when you retire, you've got retired person suffering. It's changing one thing for another. Just like those people, and there's plenty here, looking for a partner in life. Have you found someone yet? Found some of the one who's meant for you? There's a lot of people like that. It's the story which the classic story. These two Thai sisters came one day to see me. Oh, I'll never forget this. They still come to feed us every now and again. But they wanted personal counseling. And so I talked to them, and the elder sister first. And the elder sister said, "Oh, you know, I've got a husband, a Western husband, Australian guy." And he said, "I can't stand him." There's so much suffering. And you know, I'm just really wondering, should I keep working on this? Is it really salvageable, or should I sort of get divorced and try again? And you all know, again, I don't call it divorce anymore. I spread this word around in Singapore. They really liked it. We don't call it divorce. What do we call it in Buddhism? Recycling, yes. Much, much more positive word. So, and she was thinking of getting divorced. And so I gave her some nice ideas about how to solve the problems in a marriage. Because it's not that hard to solve problems in marriage. Even as a monk I can do that. Like, oh, this great story which just comes to my mind. Some of these are golden oldies, but, you know, they're just great stories about this. Because actually the lady who told me this, you know, I was had lunch with her yesterday in Singapore. She told me that she was a bit of a marriage counsellor in her early years. And she had one client who came to her, a Singapore lady. She couldn't stand her husband because her husband was coming home very late at night. She was certain that he had a mistress. And so she told the marriage counsellor, you know, actually I don't really need counselling, I just want to get rid of the guy. I want a divorce. I want to separate. Just help me get rid of him. And a marriage counsellor was a very, very smart girl. She said, look, if you divorce him now, do you think he will be happy or will be miserable? And she thought about it. Actually, it's what he wants. He'd be really happy. And in your present state, do you want him to be happy? No! I want him to be miserable. So, this is the plan. Don't get divorced yet when he doesn't like you. Go out and get a really good hairstyle. Go and get your face, you know, made up. Go and learn a bit more grooming. Go and get some sexy clothes. And when he comes home, just be really nice to him. Just cuddle him and see what happens. Because you fell in love once, see if you can make him fall in love with you again. And when he does fall in love with you again, then divorce him. Yeah, what a great idea. So that's what they did. She spent a lot of money just getting sort of face done up and nice hairstyle. What they call it, a makeover. A nice makeover, so she really looked much more attractive. And every week, go and see the marriage counselor. He started coming home earlier and earlier and earlier. He started becoming more affectionate towards her. And they'd always ask, how's it going? Yeah, he's becoming much more affectionate. It seems to be working. He's falling in love with me again. And then she missed an appointment. And so the counselor called her up at home and said, you missed an appointment this week. What happened? And he said, he's having such a lovely time. He's falling in love with me. I'm sure of it. Great, said the counselor. Now's the time to divorce him. Oh, no. We're so much in love now. Mission accomplished. Because all it is that sometimes is we have a little bit of problems in life. But there's always ways we can work it out. They fall in love with you once. Why not try and fall in love again? Now do something like romantic. No, don't come. Honestly, don't come to the Buddhist society if you want to have a nice romance. You know, we're going to get soon, another couple of months, Valentine's Day. Go and get her a present, like that, one of my favourite jokes. Like the person who asked his wife, he said, Valentine's Day tomorrow, darling, what do you want? And she said, I need nothing, I've got you. He said, yes, but what do you want? He'd been married long enough to know women. And so she looked at him and said, something, anything with diamonds in. So when she opened her present the following day, she found a pack of playing cards. It has 13 diamonds in it. So that's what you guys can get for your wife's Christmas present, a pack of playing cards. Diamonds, darling. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Anyway, back to reality. So, I told this lady, you've got husband suffering. That's what it's like, having a husband. You ask other women. And it's just, it's a difficulty having a relationship. It's not easy. But, you know, you can work at it and make it work. And the junior sister, the younger one, of course, her problem was she was looking for a partner in life. Like many people do, they can't find one. You know, they find someone who's just almost okay, but then it just all goes pear-shaped. It doesn't work. And people keep telling me, I see all these girls coming up here, say, oh, I just really need a partner in life. I'm looking for someone to go out with and share my life with, someone I can trust. And see all these nice guys come up. I'm looking for a girl. I really should start a dating agency because I've got all these potential clients. And they're all really nice people. I can't understand it because I've known some of these people for such a long time. Why can't you get on together? You know, I get on with you. Really nice people, really good people. But anyway, this is coming in a few moments. But I told this lady, said, you are looking for a husband, somebody you can share your life with. And your elder sister has got a husband she doesn't want. I can see a solution. Well, I actually said that. They got very upset at me. I don't know why. It's logic. It's reason. Your sister's got a husband she doesn't want. A younger sister wants one. Share. Isn't that what brothers and sisters are supposed to do? But then I thought, okay, you've got, you know, a single woman suffering. And I said, if you find a partner in life, you'll have what your elder sister have. Married woman suffering. And so they actually understood that. They said, yeah, you're right. And if you're married, you have married woman suffering. If you're single, you have single woman suffering. So they thought they'd become nuns. And I said, if you become nuns, then you have none suffering. Go and ask the nuns at Gitiganup. You know, they have their suffering. You can't get out of it. There's all different types of suffering. And most people in this world, all they really want to do is exchange one form of suffering for another. It's okay, you're poor. And you really just want to, you know, win the lottery. How many you want to win the lottery? Would you like to win the lottery? Do you really think that that's the end of your suffering? Of course not. All you do is exchange poor people's suffering for rich people's suffering. You look at all these rich people. They can hardly sleep at night. They've got to go, and they go to these Mayo clinics for rehab. Look at Paris Hilton. She's got rich girl suffering. So, well, do you really want to be rich? It's crazy. Be famous. So people, no one really likes me, be famous. And then you get famous people suffering. And I know that. Sometimes I always think when I go overseas I should actually wear a wig and a false beard and dark glasses so people won't recognize me. So I don't get caught in airports. You know, it happens a few times. You go in the airports and somebody recognizes you. Can I have a photo? Can I have a photo? And it happened once in Singapore airport again. And by the time I got to the boarding gate for my flight, they were calling my name. Mr. Brahma Wangso, please come quickly, the gate is closing. And it's all because these people were taking photos of me all the time. It always made me miss my plane. And even worse than that. Probably the worst thing which ever happened to me was when I was in Hong Kong giving some talks. Like, you know, you talk for over an hour and then questions and answers. And then after people run out of questions, and I think, any more questions? No. And I think I can go, and there's a whole line of people in front of me asking their questions. And I'm a monk, yes, but I'm also a human being. I too need to go to the toilet. And they wouldn't let me go. Really a lot of suffering. And so eventually the line finished, and so I got up to go. And then people grabbed me as I was walking out to ask me questions about meditation. That's my job, okay. I'm supposed to, you know, be a meditation teacher and about their life and stuff. And I finally made it to the toilet. It was in the Jockey Club auditorium in Hong Kong. I finally made it into the loo. And as soon as I got into the loo, I thought, oh yes, now I can go. Oh, I really need this. You know, it's the closest thing to enlightenment, to the joy of when, you know, you'd be really want to go for a long time and now you can actually just evacuate your bladder. Well, you know what happened? This guy just finished washing his hand. Oh, Ajahn Brahm, can I talk to you about my meditation? It was inside the toilet in the men's room. Now, it's really unfair. So anyway, I have just, you know, being a well-known monk suffering. So don't try and be like me. You know, I've been trying for years to actually upset people. I tell bad jokes. I tell the same story again and again and again. Trying to get rid of you guys, but you still come back for more. I can't understand it. So I can live a nice... So what that is, whoever you are in life, whatever you have to do, you know, if you change who you are, you just change that one type of suffering for another type of suffering. If you're a well-known monk and you want to be an unknown monk, that's just changing one type of suffering for another type of suffering. If you're young, how many young people that can't wait to grow up? Once they grow up, they can't wait to, if they could get young again. Isn't that the case? As somebody said, if you have a child, your child just born, you can't wait till they start speaking. And once they start speaking, you can't wait till they shut up. That's raising children. So instead of complaining about traffic jams, work, old age, sickness, being a monk, being single, being married, whatever it is, instead of complaining all the time, why not just be at peace with who you are, where you are, whenever you are? Even if you're tired, be happy to be tired. When you're sick, just be happy to be sick. You know, sickness has got a really bad rap, being sick. Sickness has so many advantages to it. When you're sick, you don't have to go to work. You can sleep in the morning. I remember as a kid, you know, when I got sick, I didn't need to go to school. That was actually a great advantage. And so I think a few times I pretended to be sick and got away with it. And your mother gave you your special food. You got extra special care when you're sick. So sometimes if you're sick, you know, look at the advantages of it and be happy that you're sick. Why not? You're sick. Just getting angry at it, getting upset at it doesn't change it. That doesn't make you better. But if you can just be at peace with being sick. Now that works. If you're dying, just be happy to be dying. Yeah, I'm out of here soon. The whole point of this, what I'm saying over here, is when I was signing all these books, instead of getting upset and angry and saying, what am I doing this for? I need to go back. I want to go to the toilet. I need to rest. I've been doing this for too long. Rah, 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 rah. All this complaining. Instead of complaining about life, that is the suffering. Not life, but the complaining about it. Complaining about your partner. That is the suffering. So stop complaining about life, and this is what a partner is. There's a lot of happiness there. If you can see it, if you can remember it and recognize it. But why always do we focus on one or two bad things which they say or do? And also ourselves as well. This is the, I'm supposed to be doing this as the main part of the talk, because last night, yet again, a girl came up and she was so upset about herself. She didn't like herself. Her self-esteem was just really rock bottom. And she's a really nice girl. Very intelligent. Very easy to talk with. Why can't you like yourself? And that just reminded me, even if you're rich, if you're healthy, look at that comedian, Robin Williams, who killed himself. Successful, funny, a really nice guy, but he didn't like himself. He couldn't stand himself. So, you know, even a person like that, even, well, my generation, Marilyn Monroe, the big movie star, probably one of the most beautiful girls in the world at the time, she killed herself as well. Couldn't stand herself, couldn't stand her life. And it's really amazing. I couldn't understand this at first when I first came across this as a monk. Why can't people like themselves? And I think what it is because in life we're always so negative, always so complaining about life, that other people complain about us. Your poor mother and father when you were young. You're not working hard enough. Stop watching the computer games. Do some more homework. So do your grades, make sure you improve your grades. And your peer pressure, make sure that you have more friends. As a girl, you have to be more beautiful. You're not beautiful enough. You're too fat. And if there's any fat women around, it's just an accident. You were born in the wrong age. Because I remember going to all these portrait galleries, and 100 years ago, the people who were really hot were the fat girls. Have a look in the old paintings. So if you are fat, it's just bad luck. You should have been born 100 years ago, and then you'd been sexy. Because in the old days, 100 years ago, no one would even go close to a thin lady. They think she was sick. Same with fat guys. Fat guys, 50 years ago, we were considered to be wealthy, and so we were very attractive. Thin guys would be seen to be miserable, something wrong with them. So anyway, maybe I was born at the wrong age, but it doesn't really matter for me because I'm a monk. I'm just fat and I love it. Fat people's rights. I remember seeing this little shot about this fat guy. He had a great t-shirt on. If I could wear t-shirts, I would get this one. He was really fat, and the t-shirt read, "I beat anorexia." It's a positive. Why not? Oh, the other t-shirt I saw the other day. So, "Nobody is perfect," it read. "Nobody is perfect. I am a nobody, therefore I am perfect." You can't beat that logic. So now those are people who are actually building up their self-esteem instead of listening to all these people who say you're fat, you're old, you're skinny, you're wrinkled, you've got flat breasts, you know, you're just whatever it is, and always putting you down. And unfortunately, we live in a world where everyone criticizes each other rather than praises each other. And so I've been around it. Look, how many people, it was not just you, Lucky, today. When I met you, I said, "Good evening, young lady." I said, "Oh, it's so nice to be called young lady." I think she's in her 60s or something. And I always love doing that because it makes you feel good. Praises you. And that's one of the reasons why lots of people come here. Because it's very rare for a 60-year-old or a 70-year-old to be called young lady. I know it's not true, but who cares? The whole point is we're trying to build each other up. So stop this terrible, "I'll only talk to you when I criticize you." And because of that, there are some people who, after a while, even if they're Robin Williams, they make a couple of mistakes, that's all they remember. And that's actually what they dwell upon. They dwell upon the criticisms they receive in life. The belief they aren't good enough. The understanding that there's something wrong with them. They're not a good mother. They're not a good husband. They're not a good son. They're not a good worker. They're not a good monk. And I tell people, look, just the fact that you're raising a kid, you're already a really great mother. It's not a hard, easy thing to do. You know, you're having a relationship. That's a hard thing to do. You're doing a really good job. Imagine building people up like that. What would happen? They start to get what we call confidence. They start to get motivation. Because every time you get criticized, your motivation gets pushed down and pushed down and pushed down. And without motivation, inspiration, there's no energy in life. You can't achieve anything if you think you're hopeless. Just imagine, like I always make this simile, a soccer team or a cricket team. Is Australia playing cricket again? This year, they're probably playing somebody soon. If all the commentators say Australian cricket team is hopeless, they're no good, they're too lazy, they don't train hard enough, they're too fat, my grandmother could bowl faster than you. And if you start criticizing people like that, what does it do to you? Now you feel you're hopeless. You actually start believing it until you actually live up to those expectations. Or that praise rather, that sort of criticism. You actually live down to it. When people get criticized, put down a lot, they actually meet those requirements. And the key story, one of the great stories of which shows the psychology behind this, a key story in opening the door of your heart, which I learned when I was a school teacher. This was a story of a test which was done in a school in England, two classes of kids, the end of the year exams. You know, we just done the end of the year exams for our kids in school here in Western Australia. The school year is just finished or about to finish. And it's usually, the usual thing is, on the basis of the results this year, you know, that's how you'll be graded for, you know, the streams of learning for next year. And there was one school did this really interesting experiment. They had two classes in one year. And having done their examination, they never published the results. It was, if I remember correctly, the headmistress and two psychologists were the only ones who knew what scores every kid got. But instead what they did, they allocated the children as evenly as they possibly could. The kid who came top went in the same class as the kid who came fourth and fifth, eighth and ninth, 12th and 13th, 16th and 17th. They all went in one class. The kids who came second and third, 6th and 7th, 10th and 11th, went in the other class. So they split the classes up as evenly as they possibly could. And the headmistress tried to find teachers who she thought were equally good. And they even went as far as to find classrooms with equal facilities. They made everything equal as possible except for one thing. They called one of those classes Class A and the other one Class B. And they were totally equal in ability based on the exam results. And they wanted to find out what would happen next year. Half of those kids went into Class A. And they weren't more brilliant, but their parents said, "I don't know how you did it, son. You're in Class A. Carry on. Well done." And even the kids who came second and third going into Class B, "I want you to work harder next year. You know, no more privileges for you. More homework." The parents thought Class B meant the worst. And even the teachers taught at a lower level. And the kids, with her in Class B, the kids started to believe the Class A kids were superior than the Class B kids. Because one year later, when they gave the exam again, the children in Class A did so well as if they were the top half chosen from the year before. And the Class B kids did terribly. Literally, after one year, half those children became Class A children, and the other one became Class B, simply because they gave that label and they believed in it, they became it. There's a chilling example of how we believe what other people tell us. You are a bad husband if you keep telling your husband like that. He's a Class B husband. What do you think is going to happen? He's going to become a Class B husband. If you tell your child you're stupid, he's going to become a stupid kid. So please, if you are going to do anything, at least tell your wife she's a Class A wife. And that's not just buttering her up. That is not lying. That's psychological wisdom. If you keep calling her a Class A wife, she will become a Class A wife. After a while, people begin to believe it. And they become it. That's the psychology. And understanding that core psychology of our low self-esteem or our sense of being at ease in our own skin, that is one of the reasons why you come to a place like this, because I don't criticize any of you. I would build you up. Wonderful to see you again. You're such nice people, such great people, such wonderful people. And after a while, you start to believe that, because I call you Class A people. And that's why I call all my monks Class A monks. and they become Class A monks. But most importantly, I often remind myself, I am a Class A teacher. And I become one. You never criticize yourself. I am a happy monk. That's why I become one. And you know how I do that? Every morning, this is actually when I was a student, a great meditation advice. You know, if you really want to avoid all the pain and suffering of going to see psychologists, especially when you get the bill, that's when the main pain and suffering comes. You don't need to do that, for goodness sake. Every morning for 2 years when I was a student, my first meditation teacher asked me, what do you do when you first get up in the morning? I go toilet. And I told this to this lady last night. When you go to the toilet, before even you just, you know, go into the cubicle or whatever, look at yourself in a mirror. There's always a mirror in the toilets. Look at yourself. Get out your two fingers. Push up. Smile at yourself. Make a face at yourself. And I had enough faith, you know, in these people teaching me to actually try it out. And I did it without fail for 2 years. Every morning, I looked at myself in the mirror. I was a student, maybe, you know, 19, 20. And I used to drink in those days. So those people who drank, you know what it's like having a hangover. You know, it's very scary. It takes a lot of courage to look at yourself in the mirror. And even if you haven't got a hangover, just you've been out late at night, you feel really tired and miserable. You look at the So, okay, do the erring out the way first of all, then get out your fingers and push. And so every morning for 2 years, without fail, I ended up laughing at myself, smiling at myself. And that was a big boost to my self-esteem. I was being kind to myself, smiling at myself, laughing with myself. What a wonderful way to start a day. And I really think that was one of the reasons why I was a happy person at university and why I even did well, you know, at the studies and got good grades and good degree. Boosting yourself up. Yeah, I can do this. A bit of smiling, a bit of laughter. So if ever you have a marital problem, you know, do a laugh off together. See who can smile the most. Why not try that? Because what that's doing is building up self-esteem, building up happiness, building up this motivation. The same as in if a cricket team or a soccer team or any other team, your kid may be playing sport this weekend. And if you stand by the sidelines, you hopeless son, you know, I taught you how to kick the ball and you can't even kick the ball, you're hopeless, you're terrible. What does that do to a son? They really feel terrible. They just don't even... But imagine that they really build you up. Come on, you can do it, son. Yeah, I'm so proud of you. You're a wonderful son. You're the best footballer. You're going to play for the Eagles and the Dockers at the same time. You're so good. Whatever it is. That really builds people up. And then they start to achieve. So for goodness sake, if when your kids' results come up after the exams, never put them down. Whatever it is. Try and find something good in their results. That's why when people say they got an F, I say, did your teacher, did your school tell you what F means? It means fantastic. E, excellent. And anyone who gets an A, that's arrogant. Turn it around to build people up. You know, if they get an A, they're already built up. So, you know, just build them down a bit. So whatever it is, you build people up and you build yourself up as well. And if you fail and get kicked out of university, think of all the great people who failed at university. Albert Einstein, Steve Jobs, Michael Dell, there's quite a few others as well. They did really well in life. Look at the people who passed university. They didn't make anything of their life. No money at all, like Ajahn Brahm. Did well at university. Now I'm poor. So whatever it is, doesn't matter. So, for goodness sake, whenever you look at yourself, praise yourself. And because there's few people actually do that, you have to do it for yourself. You are a good man. You are a good woman. You're a great mum. You're a great dad. You're great kids. tell your children how great they are. They do not get, you know, big heads. That's what I was taught, and that was a problem. So if you praise someone, they just get a big head. You know, my wife's insufferable as it is. So if I start praising her, she'll get just impossible. That's not true. If you praise someone, you don't get a big head. You get a big heart. That's what happens. So praise your wife. Praise your husband. And you have a wonderful life together. Stop all this criticism business. So when you get home from work, just remember, I must remember to praise my wife. Find something. There's always something you can praise. Sometimes people, I remember someone said, there's always this guy in the office who was always so positive about everybody, so they decided to give him a test. They said, okay, say something positive about Adolf Hitler. And he said, he was a leader in his field. Which is true. You always make something positive about anybody. And just that whole idea of that positive thoughts leading to positive words, which leads to people actually being more successful in their happiness and even in their career. When you actually shout for your kid on the team, they score goals, they take wickets. When you put them down, they fail. That's how it is with kids. What about with yourself? Get up in the morning and smile at yourself in the mirror. Praise yourself. Yes, you can do it. See the positive side in yourself. Look at your face in the mirror. And if you are fat, say, I'm just like Ajahn Brahm. I must be very wise. And it's true. It's not just wise. You know the old thing about, you know, people. Yes, I go to Malaysia and Singapore this last time, and I've known those people for 20 years. You know, some of them got old photographs out. When I first went there, I went to this couple over there, actually was her sister, and I only saw the elder sister. And she got out a photograph of when I went to her house about 15 years ago. See, Ajahn Brahm, this is what you looked like 15 years ago. You've actually put on weight, Ajahn Brahm. It's really mean getting out old photographs. And I said, no. You know my story. I said, I haven't put on weight. And I told her this. I say, 41 years tomorrow, I'd have been a monk. That's a long time in any career. Now, even if you, whatever job, even in the government service, you know, after 35 years, you know, you retire. After 40 years, you get a gold watch. You didn't give me a gold watch. Or whatever. But every year, you know, you practice this type of path, you get kinder and kinder and kinder. You actually grow in compassion. Every year your heart gets a little bit bigger. And now my heart is so big, it's pushing out my abdomen. Because it can't go anywhere else. You've got this rib cage, stops it pushing it out here. So it goes down here and pushes it out. So this is not fat, this is a big heart. So anyone else who's fat, tell your doctor, this is not fat, doctor, this is a big heart. It's actually true, you know. I always see that fat people are usually very jolly and very kind. And it's not bad for your health, because look, you should know this season. There's one fellow I'm sure you've all seen in the last few weeks, especially in the shopping centres, in Myers and Coles and stuff like that. They're one of the fattest people in the world, who's always happy. And he was old when I was young. And he's still alive. Santa Claus. So, why do kids love Santa Claus? Fat and happy. Have you really ever seen a fat and miserable person? Thin and miserable people, there's lots of those. So fat used to be happy, and I think I'm trying to revive that. And actually, for those people, okay, here is the medicine behind this, the science. Because I was a scientist, because I always wondered, you know, why it is that fat people are happy. And I found out there's science behind this, and doctors will confirm this. medicine, medical research has proved conclusively that when you're happy, especially when you laugh, your blood vessels expand, they dilate, they get bigger. And when you're negative, miserable, complaining, your actually blood vessels contract, they get smaller. So I laugh so much. I'm such a happy monk. After 41 years, my blood vessels are so big, they're so wide, that I can eat anything, and any gut, cholesterol, whatever it is goes in there, because it goes right through, never gets clogged. Because I have very wide blood vessels, because of being happy all the time. But if you're fat and miserable, now you've got lots of stuff trying to get through, and your blood vessels are very narrow, you've got no chance. It's like the double whammy. You're dead. That's why there's no miserable fat people left. They've all died of strokes and heart attacks. It's only the happy fat people left. So if you are overweight, you better start laughing soon. It's the only way it's going to save your life. So that's giving a positive spin on whatever's happening. And that positive spin is so important in life. For goodness sake, have high self-esteem. You are more than good enough. Actually, you're excellent. In Buddhism, you've been born in the human realm. This is a high realm. It takes a lot of goodness to actually be reborn as a human being. Traditional Buddhists know that, but they keep forgetting it. So you're great people when you see the big picture of all the different realms you can get reborn into. This realm is pretty high. So you're absolutely amazing people. And I tell that when I go to jails and teach murderers. So you're an amazing person. I do that, honestly. And they go, what? There's a beautiful person in there. You're a person who's murdered. You're not a murderer. Look at that other part. There's a great, beautiful person in there. And it's so true. And that's why all these people who come out of jail, sort of, you know, people have gone to my places, because I visited somebody's son who comes here in jail, and one of the prison officers recognized me and said, oh yeah, I remember you used to come to this jail a lot. And they reaffirmed, that's only about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, they reaffirmed that every person who went to my course when I used to teach regularly in jail never goes back to jail again. Once out, they're out. Why? It's because I always reminded them they're not murderers. They're not thieves. They're people who've done bad things. But they're people first. And that person is huge. Apparently recently over in Carnap Prison Farm, our monks were telling me there's one guy who was a multiple murderer. He didn't say the name. And apparently he read my book, Opening the Door of Your Heart, and he's totally changed. He's gone around telling everybody else, it was only two bad bricks, that's what it was, just two bad bricks. You know, the two people I killed, or three or four, I don't know. But he said, there's so many other good things in me. And that was so sweet, to see a person who's been really suffering for years start to get self-esteem back. Because they got self-esteem back, when they leave jail, they'll actually do something good for themselves and their community and their family. What a beautiful thing that is. And the only difference between those people in jail and those people sitting in front of me here, the people in jail were the ones who got caught. Some of you didn't get caught. And so, you know, that's why that even you, it's only two bad bricks if you've done something wrong. If you've got a big nose, if you're fat, or if you're not, you've lost your partner or whatever. Please, don't obsess about that. Don't think that's all there is to you. See the other beautiful part in you. Build yourself up. Praise yourself. Look at the good. And then you find you're not a Class B person anymore. You're a Class A one. Imagine what happens if you look at your partner, your husband, and he starts to believe he's a Class A person. He gets a big heart. Maybe a much lovelier person to live with. And if your kids, no matter what they do in their life, how they, school is not that important. Honestly, it's, as Daniel Goleman said, it's emotional intelligence, not IQ, which makes you successful in life. Now, some people can pass exams, some people can't. But that's no real guarantee of your success in life, about never being able to hold a relationship with somebody else, never being comfortable in your own skin, never being positive in life. That is far more a strong indicator of success in your life, not just passing your exams. I think you all know that. And so after a while you just build up your kids. So their emotional intelligence is really strong. They get confidence. Your young men get confidence enough to go and talk to a girl they like. You know, they're not afraid anymore. And girls are confident just to go out into society and enjoy themselves and reach for the stars. I can do it, why not? You always see that success is all about confidence. Even as a monk, if I lose my confidence, I can't give a talk, what am I going to say this evening, then I'll just really stuff up. But confidence, you know, the emotional intelligence, every time I give a talk, I look at each one of you. You're my friends. I care for you. I love you. And that's all I need to do to give a talk. To connect. It's the emotional intelligence. The self-esteem. The fact that everyone is a Class A kid, I'm a Class A monk, everyone else is Class A. And then you become Class A. So please, build one another up. Build yourself up. So we don't have these terrible people who lose all their self-esteem and think they're useless. I'm sure you've come across people like that. And you say, you're useless. You know, you're Robin Williams. You know, you cause so much happiness in this world. I laugh at all your jokes and all your great movies. A great person. But you tell people and they just can't see it. That's what really strikes me. Beautiful girls feel they're ugly. Great guys think they're hopeless. Why is that? It's not the truth. It's just your belief. So please turn it around and start believing in the good part of you. And once you start to see it, it's there and it grows and you become a great person. So that's a little talk today. Thank you, all you great people, for listening to me. Very good. Okay, see what questions we have over here. This is from overseas. Here we go, thank you. Well, actually, they haven't got from where they are. We've got two here. Is this from Sri Lanka, these first two? Sounds like Sri Lankan names, but they could be anywhere in the world. All options in life have suffering. But isn't it a question of the degree of suffering you choose in life? It's a question of how much suffering you want to add to what you're doing in life. Even in jail, people used to tell me that you can do your time sweet or you can do your time hard. You have a choice of how you do your time in jail. And that's the same in life. It's not the degree of suffering of life. It is just your attitude which creates suffering or happiness. The way you look at life. So suffering is not in life. It's in your attitudes. Could you please advise the husbands and wives who care a lot more than their partner? Huh? Husbands and wives who care a lot more than their partner. Okay, one person cares, the other one doesn't. And that way it's osmosis. If you're really a caring partner, then the other one like learns from you. And after a while, it just comes together. Because in a partnership, if it really is a partnership, sometimes it becomes almost indivisible. Have you ever seen those partnerships where people have dogs and the dog starts to look like their owner and the owner starts to look like their dog? Wouldn't it be wonderful if that happens with husbands and wives? If you take your husband for a walk every morning and after a while he starts to look like you. They become a partnership of pairs, so it's almost indivisible. So what happens is actually your attitudes tend to sort of be taken up by your partner, and your partner's attitude tends to be taken up by you. So just be more caring, and then you'll bring your partner up, with you, in your wake. And if your wives don't care a lot, at least they care. Forget about, take away the word a lot. At least, one that your partner cares. Maybe you might care more, but that doesn't matter. At least they care. Focus on the beautiful stuff of them, and that part grows. I keep on saying this almost every week. Water the flowers, flowers grow. Water the weeds, weeds grow. And lastly, from Malta, when someone is really depressed in a downward spiral, isn't it the case that smiling and positive techniques work better in people already happy and not depressed? It really depends. First of all, don't get into that stage where you're really, really depressed. You know, catch it before it gets that deep. And catch it in your kids by not letting them feel like they're failures because they didn't pass their exams or other people did so much better than them. So, you know, stop that before it gets into deep depression, into a downward spiral of negativity. And if you can do that with lots of smiling, that's brilliant, that's beautiful. But even if people are really depressed in a downward spiral, the problem is when we try to say, oh, don't be depressed. Because if you allow a person to be depressed, that's why sometimes I say that enjoy your depression. Don't try and get rid of it, for goodness sake. It has many advantages to it. You know, people don't expect so much from you. You get pampered. You get looked after. You say, I'm depressed. You don't need to go to work. Maybe you might be able to get sort of a pension from the government because you're clinically depressed. What a wonderful thing that is. So there's always something good in everything. And so see the good in being depressed and actually enjoy it. And then you find out it's not depressed anymore. So it's always the negativity we have towards negativity which makes it sort of spiral. And we can cut that by seeing the good in any state of mind. I was being depressed. I'm going to really enjoy it. If I get really depressed, I don't have to do anything at all. I can take a whole week off. That's actually quite a good idea. Get depressed. I can take a rest. So there is very strong... Now, how does depression work? Now you start off criticizing yourself, thinking you've done a bad job. It's so easy to do that. And so instead of thinking like that, see the beautiful stuff. It's like sometimes people's heads are just always looking to the left, always looking to, you know, the faults and the negativity. Sometimes you've got to take the head and just push it around, and they don't want to go, they push it around until it goes to the right, they see the other side. The beautiful, peaceful, wonderful side. And when they do that, so depression doesn't come anymore. So, yeah, it's a downward spiral only because you try and get depressed about being depressed. So try and do something else. And the other one I was going to give, I gave a title to stop depression, deep rest instead of depressed. Take a rest, because a lot of depression comes from tiredness. Now, we're not resting enough. We're not taking time out to enjoy ourselves. We work, push, until we get so tired and frustrated, we lose all of our motivation. So, take a deep rest, and you don't get depressed. Okay, any questions from the floor? From the audience here, from Perth? Going, as I said... Actually, quite good today because it's quite warm, so I've been sweating a lot, so I don't need to go to the toilet. So you'll be quite welcome to line up in front of me afterwards and ask all these questions afterwards. So thank you all for coming. We'll now pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādhemi suvākkhato bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi.